Hi, I'm Amelia, and you're listening to BG Hidden Gems. Today I'm here with Andrew Layden from the Bowling Green Planetarium and Observatory.
My name's Andy Layden. I'm an astronomer for the Physics and Astronomy Department, and I've been here about 25 years now. I teach both physics and astronomy classes, but I like the astronomy especially. That's what my my graduate degree is in, and I do research in astronomy, so that's my chief love.
What do you do with the planetarium or observatory? What's the right there?
We have two. There are actually two separate facilities. So the planetarium is sort of a classroom and a show room. It's near the physical sciences lab building. As you approach PSLB, there's this large dome on the ground, and the planetarium is inside that dome.
Okay.
And on the inside of the dome, we can shine images of the night sky. So anytime, day, night, rain, clouds, we can talk about what's going on in the sky and demonstrate what happens in the sky, how the stars and planets appear to move. The observatory is a separate facility. It's on the roof of PSLB, and it contains a telescope and actually an observing platform where we can mount a bunch of other telescopes. And there, we actually see the real sky, but it has to be clear and it has to be nighttime.
So how often do those buildings get used?
It's a good question. We use the planetarium as a classroom most days of the week. It seats about 114 people, and so we can do lectures or smaller group work in there. We also use it as an outreach facility. So Dr. Dale Smith, who's the planetarium director, runs public shows four nights a week during the academic year, and he also hosts shows for K through 12 kids and other public groups who want to get an invitation or get a specific show. The observatory, because we only use it at night, is a little trickier. And so for our astronomy classes, we often encourage students to visit one night per semester, one night during their class, so that they get to look through a telescope and see the sky and have the sky explained to them by astronomers.
That makes sense. That's interesting. So is the observatory open to like the public then?
It is. On nights when the public shows are on and it's clear, we'll take people to the rooftop and show them the observatory. So they get both facilities, the planetarium and the observatory.
That's pretty cool. So if someone's going to one of those shows, what could they expect?
The planetarium shows have different themes and they change all the time. And so if you want to know what's up at a given time, you can Google BGSU Planetarium and you'll get the full schedule. Right now we have a show running called Black Holes, and that'll be running through the end of April. But we had shows earlier in the semester on constellations and the sky we don't see, which is the types of light that are not visible to the human eye. The planetarium shows are full dome video shows, so it's kind of like going to a movie theater but having it over the whole sky. And it's kind of like a science documentary type format. Before the show, Dr. Smith shows the nighttime sky and explains what planets are visible, what constellations are used, you know, good to look at right now. And then goes into the show and then has time for questions afterwards. So it's a great time, you know, if you've got questions or interest in black holes, come pick an astronomer's brain about black holes, get your questions answered. And then if it's clear, we go up to the rooftop and we'll look at some bright stars. If the moon's up, we'll definitely look at that. It's always fascinating to look at the craters on the moon and the mountains. You can see them in quite a lot of detail.
That's interesting.
Oftentimes there's one or more planets visible. Jupiter and Saturn are especially interesting to look at. And then sometimes we'll point at other objects. Right now, the Orion Nebula is visible, and it's a big gas cloud, a glowing gas cloud, which is pretty impressive to
look
at.
What does it look like?
Kind of looks like a fuzzy patch of light, kind of hazy patch of light. You know, by itself, it's not stunning. There are four bright stars in the middle of it that you can see distinctly, and they light up the nebula. They light up the gas cloud. But it's interesting to think of it in the context of what we know about clouds like that. We know how far away it is, how many light years, and we know how big it is, and we know what's happening. Gas is collapsing under the force of gravity to form new stars gradually within that gas cloud. So, you know, I think the combination of seeing and understanding what's going on make for the full exciting picture.
That makes sense. It sounds really exciting. When did you start getting into like astronomy?
I was not one of those kids who knows what I want to do. I didn't want to be an astronomer since I was a little kid. I think I knew I liked sciences, and it wasn't until high school that I looked through a telescope for the first time. One of my friends had a telescope, and we're checking out planets and the moon and things like that. I went to college and took an astronomy course, and that's where I really got bitten by the bug.
Really?
At that point I said, well, I don't know if there's a career here for me, but I'll try. And so I went to graduate school and got jobs and ended up here at Bowling Green and have been here enjoying it ever since.
That's awesome. I think you might have said it earlier, but how long have you been here at BG?
25 years almost.
25. Have you been like helping with the observatory and planetarium since then?
Primarily the observatory. My official title, I guess, is director of the observatory. So we're in the process now of buying a new digital camera for the telescope up there, and doing some repairs on the telescope. You know, I've been doing that all 25 years here, and I've run some research programs that study star brightnesses using our telescope.
Oh, that's really cool.
Do some real research. We get some undergraduate students and master's students involved in scientific research. And that's led to publication of some papers and some students going to conferences around the country to promote their work.
That's really interesting.
I like the class that I teach. It's Astronomy 3090, and it's a small class. We can fit maybe 12 people at most into it because it's a nighttime observing class. It's like a lab class for astronomers. And so I teach students how to use our small 8-inch telescopes and then eventually our large 20-inch telescope, which is computer-controlled, completely professional quality telescope. I've always loved that. It's my favorite class. I especially love it in August and September when the nights are beautiful up on the roof, and I gradually like it less and less as we go through November and December, and we're up on the rooftop in the howling wind freezing at night. But as I've gotten older, it's getting harder and harder to gear up to come back to campus at 8 or 9 o'clock at night and teach a class.
So it's always at night to watch the...
To see the stars, yeah. We have a sort of 1 hour a week of sort of lecture that's, I think I've been doing it 4 o'clock in the afternoon when I'm still awake. And then we have the nighttime part, usually around 9 or 10 o'clock at night. In the fall, we'll be teaching a class that I helped to develop called Astronomy 1010. It's experimental astronomy, and so it's very basic, broad background in astronomy, but with a very strong hands-on element. So we teach it in a laboratory with lab benches, and we can do little simple experiments and do some computer analysis of those experiments. And so it's trying to get people who are not astronomy majors, not physics majors, but people who are just interested in astronomy, in the subject, doing hands-on work, thinking like a scientist, drawing conclusions, making measurements, doing some calculations. And so we'll talk a little bit about planets in our solar system, other stars, other galaxies, but ultimately, the unifying theme is exoplanets.
Okay.
It's planets orbiting around stars other than the sun. And this is a very interesting new topic. Up until 1995, we only knew about planets in our solar system. When you see Star Wars or Star Trek, they're going to all these other planets. Well, we didn't actually know that those planets existed. And the first real evidence came around 1995. And since then, we've discovered thousands of them. But we can't see them up close. They're very difficult to observe because they're small and faint compared to their the star that they orbit around.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of looking, kind of like looking for a lightning bug around a searchlight. And so in the class, we'll talk about some of the techniques that people have used to find exoplanets,
mm-hmm.
Talk about the properties that we know about the exoplanets and compare them to the properties of planets in our solar system that we do know so well. In some cases, they match up. In some cases, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've come to a much wider understanding of what planets can be and
mm-hmm.
what typical planets look like. And it's certainly true that Earth is not a typical planet.
Yeah.
It's a very rare and special planet. I always liked the Orion Nebula. Last summer, I got a new digital camera, video camera, and took some pictures of the moon, some videos of the moon, where I just let the moon move in front of the telescope. And so I really enjoyed that because it's so visual, and it's sort of like a trip. And all of the places have names. The Sea of Storms and you know, these very fancy sort of romanticized names.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't done it yet, but what I really need to do is add some music to the video and a little travel lecture, a little travel narrative, you know, here we're passing over the Sea of Storms. But even just to watch it without sound, to watch the moon pass by, is I just find it kind of fascinating and relaxing,
it's
I guess.
It's definitely
in a way.
Fascinating. Can you tell me, like, what the difference would be of, like, using the telescope here and, like, using maybe a normal telescope at home?
So our telescope here has the advantage of being bigger, so it can gather more light, and so that we can see fainter objects than you might with a home sort of amateur-level telescope.
Mm-hmm.
Though it has the disadvantage of being in downtown, and so there's a lot of light pollution. And that's gotten somewhat worse. While I like the idea of using LED lighting because
mm-hmm.
it uses less electricity, so it's better for the planet. It's Earth Day today. We're thinking about that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're also much brighter and whiter than previous street lights, and so the sky is now a lot brighter and bowling green, and it's harder to see things
that
at night.
Makes sense.
And so this light pollution, you know, is something that astronomers, and I think everybody should worry about. I mean, we would like to have it dark enough at night so that we can sleep properly and animals can sleep properly, and these very bright white lights, it concerns me that it's impacting our ability as a environment to sleep properly and to enjoy the nighttime sky.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting harder and harder to see the stars and the beauty of the sky.
I think I've ever thought about that, but that is really interesting. You can, like, see over time that, like, it's gotten harder to see.
Very much so, yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And most people now have not, for example, seen the Milky Way, which is this band of light that goes across the sky. You need to go to a dark campground type site.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place up in Michigan, on the Thumb of Michigan, where it's designated as a dark sky site.
Mm-hmm.
There have been ordinances put in place around to minimize light pollution so that people can go there to look up and see the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stunning the difference between looking up in Bowling Green and looking up at that site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that, you know, even just 100 years ago before electricity was widely used and it was still expensive, most people said, yeah, I know what the Milky Way looks like. I see it every night when the moon's not up. And now it's a rare thing to see it.
I was going to say, it's crazy that we would have to have a place that's, like, designated to be dark.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I've never thought about having to have something like that.
You'd mentioned what's the difference between observing here and on campus with our observatory and at home. Let me extend that to what's it like going to a professional observatory.
Mm-hmm.
There's professional observatories near Tucson, Arizona, on the Big Island of Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
In Chile, in South America. And many of those places are mountaintop observatories with really large telescopes, and they're also in dark sky protected sites.
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing the sky from those places, often in desert places where you have a lot less clouds and rain, and seeing the sky from those places is like seeing it, you know, as it was 200 years ago, 300 years ago, 1,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Milky Way cuts across the sky. It's beautiful. And so I encourage people, if you're traveling out west, if you're traveling to Hawaii, try to fit in a tour at one of these national observatories.
Mm-hmm.
And see what professional scale astronomy looks like. It's fascinating in its own right.
I'm sure. Have you actually been to like some of these places?
Yeah, yep, all of those places to do research. It's just, it's beautiful and often sort of unworldly in that you're on top of a mountain looking down at the world around you,
mm-hmm.
Looking up at the sky at the same time. It kind of gives you that, almost that perspective that you think astronauts have looking down at the Earth, right? You kind of
mm-hmm.
see it all of creation out there in front of you. I encourage people to come by, Google BGSU Planetarium and find out when our times are. We've got a special treat coming up in the coming academic year as well. In October, there's going to be a partial solar eclipse on a Saturday in October, and we're going to try to have some activities around that,
mm-hmm.
as we did for the 2017 solar eclipse, which is a partial eclipse here. But more importantly, more excitingly, in April of 2024,
mm-hmm.
just under 1 year from now, we'll be having a total solar eclipse here in Bowling Green. The sun's the moon will go exactly between the Earth and the sun and completely block out the bright surface of the sun, and the moon's shadow will pass over Bowling Green about 3 minutes. We'll be in total darkness, and we'll be able to enjoy a very rare and beautiful natural phenomenon called a total solar eclipse. And BGSU is in the process of planning
mm-hmm.
a big event for that. And so you will not be able to miss that. It will not be a hidden gem. It will be a gem that we all share together.